It's time for Sisters in Law. Janice and Davita Mathis are here to take your questions and give you advice.
Listen, doll, I'm not going to sugarcoat it.
Call us now at 404-892-2703 on News and Talk 1380 WAOK.
Bernadette Stannis, you know me as Thelma of Good Times. You're listening to Sisters in Law right here on News and Talk 1380 WAOK.
Call us at 404-892-2703 on News and Talk 1380 WAOK.
Good afternoon, Atlanta, and welcome to Sisters in Law on News and Talk 1380 WAOK. I am Davita Mathis, and my sister, real lawyer, real sister, Janice Mathis, is on the line from Washington, D.C. Janice, have y'all circled the wagons up there?
Well, there are all kinds of warnings being issued and police advisories and city of D.C. advisories about how to deal with it, and of course, some of the protesters have asked for special accommodations, too. We'll talk about that.
Well, we certainly have to talk about this one-year tragic anniversary of the riots, the racist riots and protests in Charlottesville, Virginia. I understand Charlottesville said no this time. They would not issue a permit to the Klan and to the Revive the Right and all of that other stuff that wanted to protest there and celebrate this anniversary. I understand that the organizer of this protest last year, Unite the Right protest last year in Charlottesville, wanted another permit. He couldn't get it from Charlottesville. He wanted the people who were violent with the tiki lamps to come back and be violent again, bring their signs so they could use them for weapons. And thankfully, there's some dispute in that neo-Nazi, racist, alt-right community. Some wanted to do it and some didn't. So I don't know if it's going to jump off in Charlottesville, but they're scheduled to be at the home of their president. That's what I'm saying, their president, Donald Trump, right across the street from the White House. Is it today or tomorrow, Jan?
It's both. Originally, the permits were issued for tomorrow, but then there are counter-protests as well as additional protests by the enemies of democracy. And so it's today and tomorrow. Lots of people are staying away from downtown because of it.
Yeah, y'all got to be locked down for 2 days during that foolishness. Well, on a happy note, I went to see Spike Lee's new movie last night. And I tell you, it really put this whole Charlottesville protest and this Revive the Right. I always call it the wrong thing. What is it? Unite the Right. This whole Unite the Right alt movement, neo-Nazi, whatever you want to call it, racist movement into historical context. Let me make it sound boring. Black Klansman is a masterpiece. Spike Lee is known for making serious movies and making really good movies, but I think this is, if not the best, one of his very best of all time. Black Klansman. Oh. It's a true story about a young police officer, Ron Stallworth, who became the first black police officer in Colorado Springs, Colorado, back in the 70s. And he and a white officer that he recruited to help him infiltrated the Klan. And Jan, it sounds exciting and dramatic, but it really is educational in the sense that it lets us know the role of the Klan then and the role of the Klan now. Roots of this protest that's going on, this alt-right movement, neo-Nazi movement that's going on right now in Washington, D.C., and the president that we have in the White House right now discusses how we got there and really discusses have we ever left there as a country. Fantastic movie. And in all of that, it was funny. It was funny.
Interesting.
And very, very entertaining. I challenge everyone to go see Spike Lee's movie, Black Klansman. John David Washington was just a revelation. It was a little hard to watch him because mm-hmm. he looks like Pauletta, his mother, but he sounds just like Denzel when he talks. A little hard mm-hmm. to look at him because you think you're going to see Denzel on the screen, but you see John David, which is interesting. And Adam Driver plays the Jewish guy who helped him infiltrate the Klan. Very interesting, very funny. Janice, you know I take pride in having what I call a good soundtrack every Saturday. But the soundtrack of that movie was fantastic. As a matter of fact, I stole a little bit from it today. So you'll get to hear some of it. We were singing in the theater. And
you were singing?
We were singing because the music was so good. And at certain points, the audience clapped. And I tell you something else. 80% or more, I would say 90% of the people in the audience were white.
Mm-hmm.
And there were some African-Americans, Thaddeus and I sat around and counted them as they came in, because, you know, I had to be the first one in the theater so I could count them.
Mm-hmm.
Mostly white people went to see the movie, but it's something that African-Americans especially need to support. We really need to.
I think having Klan in the title, and of course they didn't do the run-up to it like they did for Black Panther. It didn't feel like the same quality of pre-issue publicity. Maybe it was, but it didn't seem like it, feel like it was.
Oh, of course not. This is not a Marvel comedy. It doesn't have the budget, but it certainly has a very, very, very strong impact. Funny, entertaining, historical, and relevant. So I highly recommend it, especially on this weekend, the anniversary of the Charlottesville riot, and the death of Heather Heyer, the young lady who was out there peacefully protesting those neo-Nazis, and somebody drove a car into her and killed her just because she was out there exercising her right to peacefully protest.
Has it ever been determined what justice was brought to the perpetrator of that crime? Has there been trial, a plea, or resolution?
To my knowledge, no. I did a lot of reading in the last couple of days trying to figure out the answer to that question. And to my knowledge, from everything that I can find, no.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting.
Well,
because in a year, usually, at least there would be some indication of how it would be resolved if it wasn't finally resolved.
Well, that movie, Black Klansman, which is based on a true story, and there is a book that was written by Ron Stallworth, who was the actual officer who infiltrated the Klan. He talks about how many of those Klan members were also police officers and also federal government workers. And, you know, it brings things into focus right now about how police chiefs, some elected officials, and even talk about the president, behave because they're members of the invisible empire. It's not so invisible, especially when you're on the short end of that stick, which African-Americans are. Well, we're going to talk about that. We're also going to talk about something that you brought up, Janice, about working for food stamps.
Yeah, it's very disturbing. The bill has been under consideration in both the House and the Senate here in Washington for several months, going all the way back, frankly, to last year. I don't know how many people are aware that food stamps are actually part of the agriculture plan, the agriculture bill. And it's one of the most controversial parts of the agriculture bill that has now passed both the House and the Senate, different versions. And so now the rubber meets the road in a conference committee where the two sides try to reconcile the differences. The Senate version is a little more moderate toward people who need food stamps, people who are food insecure. The House version is quite punitive. And so I want to talk a little bit about what that means and maybe what we ought to, not maybe, what we ought to do. You know, last week I pledged that I wasn't talking about anything unless I could relate it to voting. And, of course, I know a lot of people who are on SNAP benefits. I have a lot of family members and friends who from time to time need SNAP. this is a very highly politicized issue and yet another reason to vote.
And we also want to talk about a little bit, almost the same thing, working for Medicaid. The Trump administration wants people to work for it. A federal judge says, no, you got to stop that. But, of course, they're trying to get around the federal judge's order. You're listening to Sisters-in-Law News and Talk 1380 WAOK.
They are real sisters and real lawyers. Janice and DeVita Mathis are the sisters-in-law on News and Talk 1380 WAOK. News and Talk 1380 WAOK. Got a legal question?
Hello.
Need some advice? Call Janice and DeVita Mathis now at 404-892-2703. The sisters-in-law are on News and Talk 1380 WAOK.
KKK is planning an attack.
How do you propose to make this investigation?
I'm going undercover in the Ku Klux Klan.
They want you to join the Klan?
They want to meet me first.
Yeah,
I won't.
You probably shouldn't go to that meeting.
How do you propose to make this investigation?
We'll establish contact over the phone. We'll need a white officer to play me when they meet face to face. So there becomes a combined
Ron Stallworth.
You ready?
Born ready.
The wars are coming.
I gotta get in deeper with these guys. That's what I'm talking about. Power to the people.
Black Klansmen.
Good afternoon, Atlanta, and welcome back to Sisters-in-Law News and Talk 1380 WAOK. You were listening to a clip from the movie Black Klansman, opened yesterday. Spike Lee's movie, John David Washington, is starring in it. Adam Driver is starring in it, too. You'll recognize his face if you don't recognize his name. Fantastic movie, Jan. But more than that, you know I like history. It's not preachy, but it is teachy. It taught me something, and I think I know a lot about history. I did not know the history of the Klan in Colorado, in Denver. You would think that as pristine and beautiful as their environment is, that they wouldn't be, you know, Klan-type people, but apparently the Klan moved to Denver, Colorado in 1921, and in 2 years they had 35,000 to 40,000 members, including the mayor of Denver, Colorado, was an open Klansman. He was Mayor Stapleton, Benjamin Stapleton. He selected his police chief from the Klan members. Sound familiar? That was 1923. He selected the police chief of Denver, Colorado from the Ku Klux Klan members. Also at that same time, State Senate and State House of Representatives had members who were well-known Klan members as part of their numbers. And it goes on and on and on in government, in the University of Colorado system, in all branches of government in Colorado. The Klan was very strong, and so that was the setting where Ron Stallworth, a real live, a first black police officer in Colorado Springs, Colorado, started his undercover investigation into the Klan in 1978. And it was hard to tell whether the police department was for him or against him, but when you know the history, you can see why, because they had a police chief.
But, you know, Denver was one of those cities where blacks started to make some gains. Blacks started to be elected to council posts. You know, the Denver Broncos moved there during that period of time. And remember, we had a friend that went to Sterling who worked for the Denver Broncos, still does, as a matter of fact. Denver started to be one of those cities. And I'm not surprised. But was the primary target of the racism of the Klan, was it aimed at blacks or was it more aimed at the Native American population?
It was aimed at blacks. And we shouldn't get confused about that. But what really struck me, Jam, was that you remember we were talking about how the police shootings have proliferated in the last few years, or at least our awareness of those shootings. Police shooting unarmed black men is an epidemic. It probably always has been, but we know about it because of social media and because everybody has a camera phone. But, you know, you and I talked about on this show that an effort that appears to be well coordinated and not just happenstance of police officers killing unarmed black men and women. Could only be the Klan. I believe it more now after seeing that movie than I believed it when we said it a couple of years ago.
Yeah, I have been convinced for a long time that there is an invisible empire, not nearly all policemen, that's not what I mean, but maybe 1%, 2%, 5% of police officers are sworn to not protect the public, but to exterminate black men. I think I first started to believe it when Mark Furman was a witness in the O.J. Simpson trial, that clearly his objective was to find evidence or manufacture evidence. But the other thing I want to say about Colorado, you know, that's where the Supermax is in Colorado Springs.
Right.
It has a long history of right-wing politics and right-wing causes and extreme right-wing points of view in Colorado Springs. I always thought it was kind of limited to that part of Colorado and not Denver. So it's news to me that this was endemic to Denver, too, because I think of Denver as a progressive place.
Well, you can't take it out of context. It's got to be viewed in light of its history. Very interesting history. And I tell you, watching the movie was very entertaining, but it made me come home and get on the internet and try to learn more about this Ron Stallworth and about the Klan in Denver. Never thought about the Klan being in Denver. I remember when Michael Brown was killed in Missouri, the people were confused. It was in the early days of the Black Lives Matter movement. And many of the people, I was going to say young people, but not all of them are young, were saying, well, what difference does voting make? And some of us said, well, you elect a mayor, and a mayor selects the chief of police. And if you don't like what the chief of police is doing, vote against the mayor. Vote in a new mayor who will select the chief of police who will be favorable to you. But that seemed far-fetched to many. But looking at this history, a mayor who was a member of the Ku Klux Klan picked the chief of police who was a member of the Ku Klux Klan. And other elected officials were members, known members of the body. So it all boils down to voting, is what I'm saying. It does make a
difference.
Well,
you know, the other thing is that I don't care. Well, it matters what the police do. But police are always accountable to elected officials.
Right.
And so I've always thought that we focus too much, almost too much, on police activity, because police activity, as you know, is dictated by the people who are inside the courthouse and city hall.
Right.
The people on the outside, the police officers, are more or less security guards. And I don't mean to demean them or belittle them, but they're more or less taking orders from the people inside with the robes on, the suits on.
Most definitely. They don't act independently. They have police chiefs who are appointed officials. They have mayors they must respond to, councils they have to respond to. They are elected officials. And, Janice, I think if we can say it another way, you say we focus too much on the police. Well, maybe we don't focus enough, because if we really focus, we'll realize that they are controlled by elected officials, and we are the people who have the power to elect and excuse the grammatical error, but to unelect people, too, to get rid of elected officials.
Think about it now. The reason police officers don't get convicted of these crimes is because the law is stacked in their favor.
Right.
Police officers don't make the law that governs their behavior and their defenses.
No.
They didn't come up with sovereign immunity. That was made by some legislators, and they are all elected officials. So maybe what I'm thinking is we don't focus enough on the people who make the rules and regulations under which police have to work.
That's right. Well, we got a lot of callers, and I'm not surprised, because this is, we were talking about some real serious topics, but let's see if we can get one in before the break, beginning with Gideon. Hey, Gideon.
Peace and blessings on this beautiful Sabbath. How are you today?
Doing nicely.
Excellent, excellent. You know, in reference to two quick issues, in reference to the march in Washington, you know, I can respect the man that tells me to my face that I don't like you or I hate you, because as a man myself, that would be what I would do, and it allows me to protect myself, to steer clear of that individual, or to make sure my family and I understand that we're at war. I think that the reality of our circumstances in this country is clear, not based on Spike Lee's movie or what we've seen from people that were banished out of Forsyth or the people that were in Marietta, Jonestown, and their land was taken, but just by the very fact that we are here. So when we talk about this issue of voting and how it helps, when you're dealing with the term collusion from the ground up, judicial, educational, environmental, every aspect of this system is pitted against
us. Well, Gideon, it's my fault. I brought you in right before the break. Can you hold on? Because I feel giving you counterpoint after the break.
Yes, ma'am.
Hold on. All right. You're listening to Sisters-in-Law News and Talk 1380 WAOK.
Hello, this is Ron Stallworth calling.
Well, who am I speaking with?
This is David Duke.
Grand Wizard of the Ku Klux Klan. That David Duke?
God.
Last time I checked, what can I do for him?
Well,
since you asked, I hate blacks. I hate Jews.
Mexicans and Irish. Italians and Chinese.
But my mouth to God's ears, I really hate those black rats. And anyone else, really, that doesn't have pure white Aryan blood running through their veins.
I'm happy to be talking to a true white American.
God bless white America.
Say it louder. I'm coming to town. Say it louder. I'm coming to town. Yeah. Some people say we got a lot of malice. Some say it's a lot of love. But I say we want to quit moving until we get what we deserve. We've been built and we've been scorned. We've been treated bad, talked about.
Good afternoon, Atlanta, and welcome back to Sisters-in-Law on News and Talk 1380 WAOK. We were talking to Gideon, who was telling us something.
Hey, all Gideon, the evils of voting.
Pick up where you left off, Gideon.
But before I do that, Gideon, let me just pose one other question to you. I'm not going to try to comment because I don't feel like fussing today. I really don't have the energy for it. But what is your response other than saying we should not vote? What is your response to what we see here in Washington? What should we do? Should we lie down in front of them? Should we arm ourselves and go shoot them? What specifically should we do in as part of this confrontation, if anything?
No argument whatsoever, beautiful ones. You know, the OJ said it very succinctly. They smile in your face.
Yeah, we know that, but what should we do? That's the question.
Well, what we should do is to do what you said at the beginning of your introduction, speaking to your sister. What did you say? Have you all circled the wagons? That's a very specific strategy, but it works. And it was very clear that when you mentioned that, the analogy is synonymous with unity. The unification of our communities is very succinct, it's precise, and it is a definite deterrent.
Well, why don't you unify with us, Gideon, and go vote and stop fighting us? It's like we're your enemy. Black women are not your enemy. Why don't you
follow
black men and work. Why don't you try following black women? It might work.
Uh-oh, look out now. Well, the issue for me, again, and you asked me the question, I answered it, but see, we are in enemy territory, nor do we believe we're at war. And both of these analogies are synonymous.
And I spend my life fighting racism. I fight it in every way I know how, except with guns. I fight it with legislation. I spend my Saturday afternoons, instead of being outside, I'm on the radio trying to reason with people about what we can do to fight back. So don't tell me about I don't fight. You know,
I'm
about to fight
you don't
harder
fight.
Than I do.
No, I'm not saying you don't fight. I'm simply saying you don't vote for the enemy. You don't join the enemy. That's called treason. And you don't prepare a place for the enemy to come into your circled wagons and destroy what you've created. So, the analogy of circling the wagons is synonymous with our communities, unifying, having watches, being able to determine that.
Behind what, Gideon? Unify to do what? Watch to see if they're going to come get us? Yeah, they are. Watch to see if they really hate us? Yeah, they do.
That's a very, I can give you a one sentence answer. We unify around land that we have paid for.
I own land. I bought land in ghettos in two or three different cities. How much do you own? Stop misleading our people and giving them pablum instead of real solutions. Stop.
How is that misleading, and how is it pablum when you're talking about land ownership as a collective people?
Talking about it. Stop talking about it. Where is the bank where we go investing in? Should we go to Citizen Trust? Should we stop?
No.
Where is the solution, Gideon?
Our
solve it.
Okay, our families traditionally didn't trust the banks, and we shouldn't. Look at what Wachovia, how many lawsuits have come against. I said Wachovia, I mean
Wells Fargo. We don't trust nobody. We verify everything. I'm not talking about trusting. Where is the strategy? Where is the...
The strategy is land ownership and going after the land that we've owned and being able to colonize and populate it so that we can create the circled wagon scenario that your sister talked about.
Well, we're not going to avoid the larger society by doing that. Like Janice says, she owns land in different places, in different area codes. And we subject to the law. We're still subject to the government.
No, I'm not saying, you talked about blacks or native. We are the Native American. Native Americans have their own governmental council, as you well know. And even though we're subject to the law, they're also subject to common law of natives, of people who have their own governmental structure.
Yeah, but that doesn't include us. Well, Gideon, we're going to try again the next time. Thanks for
calling.
No
problem. Thank you so much. Peace and blessings. Much love. I'm out.
Kahari from Atlanta, you have a legal question?
Yes, hello. Good afternoon. How are you guys doing today?
Oh, we're going to try to calm down, but we okay.
Yes, that guy there, he's a character. He must have drunk a big glass of man this morning because he sounded different to me a little bit. I had two quick questions. First question is, my girlfriend, she lives in Florida, and she has a child, and she's wanted to move to Georgia. So the question is, what steps do she needs to take to notify the courts or her daughter's father, because he's on child support. I believe there's visitation in place, but she has custody of the child. But what steps should she take to cross state lines?
Excellent question. I answer this question a lot, especially at this time of year. She needs to, if she's on speaking terms with her child's father, she needs to call him and tell him what her plans are. She needs to tell him, because she's an American. Okay. And she has a right to move. We have the right to travel in America. And so he can't stop her from traveling, but some arrangements need to be made for the visitation. The child support will follow the child, but visitation may not be feasible in the same way that it's ordered because of the distance. I don't know how far she's moving from where he is, but some changes will probably have to be made. I would start with a conversation. If a conversation is not productive, I would go through mediation regarding or arbitration regarding changing the order so that he can see the child on a schedule that's feasible because of the distance. Typically, it's on during holidays, extended summer visitation, extended holiday visitation, and some weekends when they can plan those weekends. But that conversation needs to start immediately, because she wouldn't want to be in the position of having him file something against her saying she's in contempt of court because she moved out of town and didn't try to make arrangements to change the visitation to accommodate the move. That's the only problem I see.
Okay. And the second question I got is, I got a 16-year-old, and she wants to be an entertainment attorney. So what steps and what avenue should I be navigating her so that she can, fulfill her goals? I know that I'm thinking that I want her to go to school in Georgia so I won't have to pay out-of-state tuition. So do you have any schools, good law schools that you could recommend, or what tests that she needs to be taking now that she's in the 10th grade, going up to graduating?
Well, I would say, go on, Jan.
Until she is out of law school and a graduate of law school, the program of study is pretty much the same for every kind of lawyer. What I would focus on now, if I were, you know, advising her, is to make sure she learns as much as she can in high school. It would be helpful if she could take Latin. It would be helpful if she could take another foreign language. Read everything she can. Start to read publications now like Variety and rolling out other publications that focus on media so she gets familiar with the jargon and the terms as soon as possible. There are also camps, summer camps, and enrichment camps for children who are interested in entertainment. Now, she's not interested in being an entertainer, but the more she knows about entertainment, the more prepared she'll be to address the subject of entertainment law once she gets out of high school, finishes college, goes to law school, and then gets a chance to specialize. There's not much she can do to prepare to be a lawyer now except to become a great reader and writer.
And study everything she can study. I would have said the exact same thing, especially about taking Latin. People say it's a dead language, but it's dead until you take that SAT and LSAT and you practice law. I use Latin every day.
But you say LST. Is that another?
LSAT is the entrance exam for the law school. So she needs to read, study, make as many A's as possible, and take Latin or any other foreign language. But I really recommend Latin if you can find a school that teaches it.
And one last thing, I would recommend that she do some kind of logic game. I like Sudoku because logic is a big part of dealing with the law, too.
And Jeopardy's good, too.
And Jeopardy.
Okay.
But make it fun. You. Make it interesting.
I'm proud of her. I look forward to hearing good things about her.
Thank you so much for taking my call.
You're welcome. You're listening to Sisters in Law News and Talk 1380 WAOK.
Hi, this is Pamela, the Shoe Lady Reynolds of Exclusively You Shoe Design. When I need legal advice, I turn to the Sisters in Law attorneys, Janice and Davita Mathis, on News and Talk 1380 WAOK.
News and Talk 1380 WAOK.
Got a legal question? The Sisters in Law are here to help.
I can tell you've been crying and you're needing somebody to talk to. Girl.
They're so raw and real, and they ask all the questions I want the answers to.
Call now. 404-892-2703. The Sisters in Law on News and Talk 1380 WAOK.
Welcome back to Sisters in Law on News and Talk 1380 WAOK. Jan, I have to confess, and I'll keep confessing, I stole the soundtrack of Black Klansman. It was a good soundtrack. We were singing and dancing until the end when everybody in the theater got quiet because it was a real thriller and we were really worried about the characters and how they would come out. Well, Ron Stallworth did come out alive. I shouldn't have told you that, though, in case you're going to see the movie. But he's alive today, and he wrote a book about his experiences, and the movie is based on the book. He has some real insight into the Klan, its workings in Colorado, a place I never even thought about the Klan being, but I think that's the whole point. The Klan is in places where you don't think about it being.
Including courtrooms and legislatures.
And that's his point, in courtrooms and legislatures. And they have been there historically. I know that Birth of a Nation was the first movie ever shown in the White House because, you know, the president, Wilson, was
the president. And you know, too, from being a prosecutor, that no police chief and no police officer is going to take upon themselves to institute a Klan organization inside a police department without at least the tacit cooperation of the lawmakers.
Of course. Because the lawmakers pick the police chief. And so they know who they're picking. They're picking people from among their peers. If they're in the Klan, they pick a police chief who's in the Klan. And they set up a system within the police departments and also law enforcement agencies that, you know, promote that.
And that's why I get so frustrated with the Gideon point of view. I'm not saying with Gideon as a person. I like him as a person. I wish he could be my colleague. But I get so frustrated with that point of view because What harm would voting do?
Yeah, I don't know what point of view that is.
People anyway. Why not express ourselves about either lesser of two evils, or maybe there's a black person we want to vote for, or maybe there's some good-thinking white person we want to vote for? Why not participate in the selection of the people who form the rules and the regulations by which we live?
Well, I don't know what his point of view is. I hear that, you know, we're in trouble. White people don't like us. We don't like them. Okay, but then what? What's the solution? We haven't heard that from him.
He got closer today. He said that we should circle the wagon.
Oh, he just repeated what I said. He didn't even say what circle the
wagon. Well, what did you mean by circle? I didn't hear you even say circle the wagon. Well, so I didn't know the context.
Talking about the protesters in Washington coming back this week is an awful anniversary of what happened in Charlottesville last year this time. When Heather Heyer was killed, peacefully protesting, when they were walking through the streets with their tiki torches and weapons and Confederate flags and wreaking havoc across Charlottesville and Virginia. Now they're coming to Washington to stage their demonstration across the street from the White House, but they're just coming home because nobody in the White House opposes them.
So when you said fact, circle of wagons, you meant...
When I said circle of wagons, have you battened your hatches for those racists and neo-Nazis and those social misfits who are going to be flooding into the city of Washington for the protests of today and tomorrow? That's what I was talking about.
So did you mean confront them or...
No.
Did you mean to lock your windows and doors and stay inside? What were you thinking?
What I meant was to be on guard for those that... influx of people who are coming to Washington for these protests for the next 2 days. But I don't believe in burying your head in the sand, and I don't believe in the give up formation. I believe that we ought to keep fighting and fighting and fighting, but hand-to-hand combat is not productive. We have different weapons of our warfare, and it's not shooting people. It's voting. It's organizing. It's planning. And I don't see anything wrong with us buying as much property as we can buy in our traditional neighborhoods. Nothing wrong with that. But if you want to know how it's governed, if you want to affect how it's governed, you got to vote. So, yeah, he was just trying to say something to get off that heat you were putting on him. It's okay. But we have Jesse on the line who wants to respond to Gideon.
Oh.
Hey, Jesse, how are you?
Blessings. Can you hear me?
Yes, very well.
Yeah, blessings to get in. Blessings to all the soldiers out there. Blessings to you too, Queens.
Thank you.
Solution is what I want to respond to, because Gideon was basically not getting to parts. I know, and I believe at least he's adding to the not voting. And I have retracted from the don't vote attitude. I won't vote, but I don't get into that. Yet what I talk about in the vote is this. When are we going to begin to vote for the intellects and in the commanders that will do our infrastructure? And that's what we're not doing. And our attitude is largely combative with each other, opposed to looking for agreeable situations to establish a front from. What say you?
Well, I don't know if I understood what you're advocating. As a matter of fact, I know I didn't understand what you're advocating. What is it you're saying we should do?
Okay. We have to have order, but right now, what Gideon's alluding to, in my belief, is we're voting and fighting to be a part of someone else's corporation. Here's our dilemma. Our ancestors sweat, bled, and died for the establishment of their corporation. Here's the other dilemma. They established their corporation on our ancestral land. And these are the pertinent points we need to make the forefront of our education, so that the miseducation through religion or the miseducation through their manipulation of education can first be quelled. We need to stop that, and our affluent money people need to be addressed in a manner that is productive, but it is a real trickle down, and not so much down, but out, so that our disenfranchised we go out and we reach out to them, but not to vote in a situation that to them seems hopeless, but to be a part of a situation and possibly to vote in a situation geared specifically for the dilemma that they may be facing. And then we address and agree upon how many of our situations have come into being, whether it's a father that's not in the household, whether it's alcoholism or drug abuse. We do that first with our people. Not that we won't do it with white people or Spanish people or Chinese people. We openly, forcefully, boldly, and with purpose do that as a unit, getting rid of all individual.
If I send you a list of 10 organizations that are trying to do similar things, would you join any one of them?
They can come join me, and I'll join them. We'll join together.
Well, what's your organization? I'll join yours. What's yours? What you doing?
See, now you're talking Latin to me, that organization thing.
Well,
I don't speak
you said
Latin.
Unite. Unite to what?
Us. Your melanin. Your melanin.
Okay,
is
so how do we do that? Where do we join and when is the meeting?
Cafe Ulu. Ulu Cafe, which is a co-op. And it's the beginning of how we become economically comfortable with each other. It's hard for us to invest and grow with each other right now. Cafe Ulu has a cooperative coffee presence, and we're inviting people into that presence to bring their ideas.
Okay, I'm gonna join Cafe Ulu. You gonna join the National Council of Negro Women?
Well, I'm with the UNIA, and I'm not a woman, and I don't need.
You don't have to be
right
a woman
now.
To join.
You don't have to be a woman. We
I thought
got
you
men
to unite.
Too.
But let's 83-year-old
organization has been buying land and building housing and helping people build farms and
that organization you're speaking of. Needs to be one of the top organizations. No, this is a solution. That's a challenge for us. All of these different organizations, and we're not one.
What's yours called?
I am a human being serving my creator only.
What's the you
so
said
how do
you
we
had a
unite
cooperative?
You,
I'm just trying to get the name of it.
Ulu Cafe, the letters stand for Us Lifting Us. It's at 2640 Sylvan Road, right there in the Sylvan Plaza. A little small, not so small, but a nice
How do you get involved in it?
You get involved
by showing up. What are you asking people to do? You buy coffee or what do you do?
You may buy coffee. You may make a contribution to the entertainment that will be there. We're going to have live entertainment. You can bring your own instrument because it's called the Live Radio Show. And I'd love to get you ladies involved because we play music. We jam. We just make up music. Somebody might know a song and play that song. Then we stop and discuss what we need to talk about to know each other. That's what we need, places that do that first. You can't start a business until you sit down and you relax and look at the human being across the table from you comfortably, knowing that you're there to be comfortable to do something. And that's what the purpose is.
We thank you, Jesse. The music is playing. I'm going to look up the Ulu Cafe and I'll try to join you. And you, I want you to join some other things, too. Because if we're going to unite, we can't just unite one way. We got to unite all around. We appreciate you. Thank you for calling. You're listening to Sisters in Law News and Talk 1380 WAOK.
News and Talk 1380 WAOK. The opinions expressed on this show do not reflect the views of the management of Intercom Radio. Call us now at 404-892-2703. It's time for Sisters in Law. Janice and Davita Mathis are here to take your questions and give you advice.
Listen, doll, I'm not going to sugarcoat it.
Call us now at 404-892-2703 on News and Talk 1380 WAOK.
everybody in Charlottesville knows what you're talking about. It's still absolutely on everybody's minds there. It's like a one-lane road. It's relatively small, and there were hundreds of people, so they took up the whole street.
Right when we came to this intersection, people were, you know, we were happy, we were cheering, and it was like, which way do we go? Because we could have went left, we could have went right, and they go left, go left. So it was like a group unison, like we were together, we were one.
Extremely
we were
happy.
Happy
and jubilant, and you know, whatever you want to say. Made that left-hand turn, and I was talking to somebody beside me, and then I heard a bunch of yelling up ahead.
Heard him coming up next to me, and then saw sort of a flash because he was moving at speed.
He was flying, and I just pushed Rissa. And I tried to jump in the back of the truck, and
it's chaos.
He had backed up the hill so that he could come barreling down the street at speed to do as much damage as he could. And then it was just pick up the camera and try to follow it.
A girl was leaning over me, and I heard, you gotta hold your head together. And that's when I felt the blood, and you know, I could feel I was gassed open. I was right on top of Heather Heyer, which I didn't know at the time. I was sitting there counting the chest compressions that they were doing on the girl beside me. And I remember counting to 29.
I got hit right here. I got hit right here.
It's still hard to look at. I've seen it so much now.
In that picture of me, I mean, I went all over the world. Yeah. Heather's actually in that picture.
That's her. That's her mouth, her nose, and her ass.
There are all these little details around the photo. There's all these sunglasses and shoes that have popped off of people that are just flying through the air. There are water bottles and water spraying. There are signs like around the edges that say things like love and solidarity. And there are even other people being impacted on both edges of the frame. There are people hitting the ground. And it's just, there's a lot to look at in one picture.
I think that's probably why I cry every time I talk about it, because, you know, why was it me and not her that got to get up and walk away? And I mean, I was right on top of her, like literally touching death.
Good afternoon, Atlanta, and welcome back to Sisters-in-Law on News and Talk 1380 WAOK. We're acknowledging a very solemn anniversary of the 2017 Unite the Right riot protest killing in Charlottesville, Virginia. The Unite the Right 2 is going on in Washington, D.C. right now and tomorrow. Jan, do you see any progress that we have made in addressing those issues that were so obvious last year this time? The issues of the rise of the neo-Nazis, the Klansmen, and you can't leave out the president.
Well, I think it's going to be a long time before we see measurable progress. I think this is a virus that's going to have to work its way through the American system. But having said that, there are two or three competing pieces of legislation on the Hill right now that would deal with criminal justice reform. One of them is backed by the president's son-in-law. There is so much distrust, however, that neither side is willing to trust that the other has good intentions. The Democrats seem to think that the Republicans just want to camouflage the issue. The Republicans think the Democrats want to demagogue the issue. And so there are clear lines of distinction between them and some good provisions in both. To that extent, I think there is some progress. I also see progress in the way the football players responded to this last wave of insults from the White House. More of them than ever stood up. And for those football fans, San Francisco beat Dallas the other night in more ways than one. I say San Francisco 2, Dallas 0.
Well, I never would have thought of it like that, Jan, but I'm glad that you did.
Well, you know, Jerry Jones has been daring his players, and poor Dak Prescott, who's the least paid starting quarterback in the NFL, talking about he doesn't think people ought to take a knee on the field, although he did clarify it by saying that he thought that there was no question about the fact that there's prejudice, but that there were more effective ways to deal with it. You've got that protest and but more players than ever stood up and held their fists up and stayed off the field and knelt down to protest what they see And then Trump talking about they don't even know how to define it. I think what I would like to see, I'm going to see what I can do to engineer it or facilitate it, is maybe 100 of those NFL players show up on Capitol Hill and walk the halls, go see Mitch McConnell and Paul Ryan and let them know that they can define it. Nothing seems to disturb some people more than the prospect of big, intelligent, well-educated, well-paid black men.
Yeah, I think you're right. I would love to see that too, Jan, and I know the NBA would probably like to get in on that as well. I'd like to see LeBron walk those halls. If he
wouldn't
can
that be wonderful? And I'm so proud of Michael Jordan because, you know, we put him in the see nothing, say nothing, do nothing camp.
Right.
But he came out last week to defend his brother LeBron. And I think that's just a wonderful thing. Now, you're talking about Gideon. You're talking about unity and coming together. That's an example of how we can unify.
Yeah, and back to our theme from now until the election, voting, voting, voting. Janice, you brought up a very good point. I don't know if our community at large understands that food stamps and Medicaid are in jeopardy right now as we speak.
We had a big tax cut, and when you take money out of the budget by cutting taxes, you have to put money in the budget by cutting something else. And the something else that's being cut is food stamps, or at least that's the proposal. Too many people on food stamps. So the proposal is that up to age 60, in order to qualify for food stamp benefits, you would have to be engaged in a work program. Now, that sounds fine on its face, but most people of that age, and according to Social Security rules, if you're over the age of 50, you don't have to learn how to do new work in order to qualify for benefits if you are already disabled. Well, if you need food stamps and you're elderly or an older person, then why should you have to go out and be involved in a work program? Most people who get food stamps go to work anyway, as soon as they can. That's what the statistics show. So this is just something added on to make it more difficult, more paperwork, more bureaucracy. I know a lot of people who are on food stamps from time to time, and I think it's important that we preserve those benefits so that people don't have to struggle so hard just to feed themselves.
Well, and
just to feed themselves.
It's sinister and evil to try to deny people the right to feed themselves in that way. And on the same note, Federal District Court Judge James E. Boasberg, Federal District Court Judge in Washington, D.C., ordered that Kentucky could not require their Medicaid recipients to work to receive their Medicaid because it would cut 95,000 low-income people from Medicaid in the state of Kentucky. Well, the Trump administration, in their typical way, is going around approving state plans to cut people from Medicaid because they won't work, even though a federal judge has ordered them not to do that in the state of Kentucky. And it's crazy, but they're doing it. They don't think anybody can stop them. We got to vote, y'all. Well, we talked that whole segment up, but if you're holding on, please hold on. We're coming to you after the break. Miss J, Scotty, Renee, Cliff, and you, if you call us at 404-892-2703. You're listening to Sisters in Law, News and Talk 1380, WAOK.
Well, I like how you're running your show, both of y'all being on there, and it's kind of different from everybody else. Everybody else is kind of like beating on talk radio. It seems like you're engaging some conversation, so I like that.
They are real sisters and real lawyers. Janice and DeVita Mathis are the Sisters in Law on News and Talk 1380, WAOK. News and Talk 1380, WAOK. Got a legal question?
Hello?
Need some advice? Call Janice and DeVita Mathis now at 404-892-2703. The Sisters-in-Law are on News and Talk 1380, WAOK.
I know a place.
Good afternoon, Atlanta, and welcome back to Sisters-in-Law on News and Talk 1380 WAOK. Now, you know you can listen to us live at News and Talk 1380, but you can also listen to us at WAOK.com and radio.com. get the app, radio.com, and listen to Sisters-in-Law and all the great programming on News and Talk 1380, WAOK. Well, Janice, callers are waiting, and I'm not going to keep them waiting. Renee has a legal question. Hey, Renee, how are you?
Hi. Yes, my mother has dementia, and all of her ID has expired. So I have gone online to try to get her birth certificate so we could renew her ID, and they want unexpired IDs, which we don't have. So now what do we do?
Well,
you may
go on, Jan.
I was going to say, depending on what her assets are, because it's an expensive process, you may have to have a guardian or a conservator appointed for your mother. The problem is, once she has dementia, it's going to be difficult to get any of the unexpired ID that you need. So a driver's license is going to require that she go to the facility. Same is true with the state-issued ID. She can get a birth certificate, of course, but that's going to take somebody who can sign documents on her behalf. And more likely than that, not, that's a guardian. If you had done it before, and if she has what we call a lucid interval, where she understands who she is and what she owns and who's related to her, you could do what's called a power of attorney. But once she has dementia that affects her ability to think and reason, it's too late for that.
And I'm concerned about what types of documents you're trying to reproduce. Now, you certainly wouldn't want to reproduce a driver's license.
In honor for her to get a state ID, she can no longer drive. So in honor for her to get a state ID, she needs her birth certificate.
Right.
And I can't get a birth certificate because everything is expired. So I'm just trying to figure out what else we need to do.
Well, you can get a birth certificate. If you are appointed her guardian or conservator, you can get her birth certificate. And with that,
let me ask you another question. Why do you need a state ID?
Well, she needs a state ID so I can maybe get her into assisted living or whatever, but I can't do
Does
it with
have
her.
A Social yeah, Security
the
card?
Guardianship will take care of that.
Okay, so security of guardianship. And I
what
get that
are you in Georgia?
Yes, ma'am.
I would visit the probate court of the county where my mother resides.
Okay.
Visit the probate, P-R-O-B-A-T-E, probate court. They have forms for guardianship. And sometimes
yes,
it's called a conservatorship, depending on whether she has financial assets.
Okay.
And with that, you can get a birth certificate. Now, she still has her Social Security card, right?
Yes, ma'am. We still have her the old one and the new one also.
Well,
so we have a birth certificate.
Yeah.
We just don't have
the social worker
birth.
At the facility where you, if you're trying to get her into assisted living, typically
yes,
they'll have
ma'am.
A social worker who's expert at getting those documents for you.
Where she lives, now she's been there 13 years.
Mm-hmm.
So now they're not going to renew her lease in October, and I must find her somewhere to go.
Okay, and they would not require a picture ID for her to go to a facility because of her condition, but she would need a Social Security card, and you need to be her guardian, or someone else that's close to her needs to be her guardian to handle her business matters.
Yes, ma'am.
The other thing you might consider doing is Social Security may appoint you her representative payee, which is a lot cheaper than a guardianship and quicker. And it might result in the same thing if Medicaid is going to be paying for the nursing home.
Well, where, but so when we go to the Social Security office, I ask for what?
Representative payee.
Okay.
Representative payee. In other words, her check would start coming in your name instead of her own name, and you could make certain business decisions for her.
Well, the bank, it automatically goes there, and my name is on her bank account, so.
That's not quite, and that's good, and that's helpful, but it's not quite the same thing as being recognized by Social Security as the person who's responsible for making decisions about her benefits.
Okay.
And it's a trip, though. My heart goes out to you. You probably have heard us say that our father had Alzheimer's, and so we had a lot of personal as well as professional experience, and
it
it's tough.
It happens so quickly,
yes. And
it's not that many of us, and I'm the only one that's here in Atlanta, so...
It's a heavy burden, but do it step by step. I would, first thing I do, I think Jan would do the Social Security and become the representative payee. Mm-hmm. And the second thing I would explore, and you can do it simultaneously, is probate court and try to be appointed her guardian or conservator. Those would be
and
very
important.
And
in Georgia, you're lucky because they have these forms. You just fill in the blank with the name, the address, the date of birth, her condition. She'll have to be, be examined by a doctor. It's fairly straightforward.
Gen Care takes care of her, which is a geriatric service.
And the social worker.
They can verify that she needs a guardian.
Yeah, and the social worker at the facility where she lives or through DFACS. Would DFACS also handle that here in Georgia, Jan? DFACS
only if she's neglected or abused.
Oh, seeking placement.
Only if there's an allegation that she's neglected. But I tell you what else, Legal Services Corporation has an Elder, E-L-D-E-R, Elder Law Project, where they give lawyers to senior citizens who can't afford it without charge. Elder Law Project at the Legal Services Corporation.
Let me ask you a question, Janice. Who does the placement of people in nursing homes in Georgia?
Department of Medical Assistance.
Okay. So they could
and
be assistance in placing her.
Them.
Right. Well, good luck to you. We sympathize with you. I've done it personally and professionally. I learned everything I learned from going through it personally, though.
Yes, ma'am.
And
sound young, are you?
No, ma'am. I'm 60. No, I'm in my 60s.
Yeah,
mother, she was born in 31.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, good luck to you, and I hope you took notes on that, and if you need to, call us back, because we're willing
ma'am.
To help.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you.
And thank you for your call.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
I think we can get another call in. Can we, Sean? Miss J from Atlanta.
Hello.
Hey, Miss J. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you.
Thank you for holding on. What's your legal question?
Yes. I'm concerned about... it's a very long story, so I'm going to try to
keep it. Maybe you can start it now, and I'll bring you back after the break so we
okay.
can ask.
What I need is someone to explain to me habeas corpus in layman's terms.
To have the body. That's what it means in Latin.
Yes.
Okay.
And that's about as far as my understanding of it.
And why do you think it's important for you to know about habeas corpus?
Well, I have a loved one who's incarcerated currently. And he's up for an appeal, and for a lawyer to do it, we paid a lawyer one time, and so they told him he needs to do the habeas corpus, and I'm trying to get some understanding of how this.
Well, let me see if I can ask some questions and shed some light. How long ago was your loved one convicted of the crime that he's in prison for?
This is going into 6 years.
And he has filed appeals already?
Yes, ma'am.
Well, let me tell you that habeas corpus is not going to help you in this situation. Habeas corpus means to have the body to literally get him out of prison, but that's not going to happen until one of his appeals is accepted and his conviction is overturned.
Mm-hmm.
And so until his conviction is overturned, habeas corpus will not help him.
So what you're going to need, in addition to habeas corpus, you're going to need new evidence, something that the court overlooked, either a fact, but more importantly, some legal error that was made in his trial that you're just now discussing.
Yes.
Because he's already had an appeal. So what is it about his situation that makes it unique or unusual that the court needs to take a look at it?
During his trial, they found some errors that were like he was on medication. He had been had applied for medical assistance because of
was
emotional
that brought
condition.
Up in his appeal?
That did
did
not come
up
in the court. No.
Well, ladies, hold those thoughts. The music is playing. Miss J, if you can come back, we'll talk to you more about the situation. You're listening to Sisters in Law, News and Talk 1380 WAOK.
Hello, I am Reverend Jesse L. Jackson, president of the Rainbow Push Coalition. You're listening to Sisters in Law with Janice and Davida Mathis on News and Talk 1380 WAOK, the voice of the community. Keep hope alive.
News and Talk 1380 WAOK.
The sisters in law are holding court. Call now with your legal questions. 404 892 2703. News and Talk 1380 WAOK.
Everybody, join me. Don't start a love tree.
Welcome back to Sisters in Law on News and Talk 1380 WAOK. We were talking to Ms. J, who had a question about a loved one who has been convicted of a criminal charge and is in prison for a number of years. She wanted to know about habeas corpus, but we don't think habeas corpus is really what you need, Ms. J. I understand your loved one has gone through at least one appeal. And the issue of his using medication or not receiving his medication was not brought up in that appeal. Is that right?
Yes, that's just one item.
Mm-hmm.
There were a number of blatant mishandlings, and
of his
so that's
appeal.
Why we were told to try this habeas corpus rule.
Habeas corpus won't do a thing until his conviction is overturned. They're not going to let him out of prison until his conviction is overturned.
Uh-huh.
And unless his conviction is overturned. Now, to your knowledge, is a second appeal in process?
No.
Has there been a post-conviction relief hearing?
No.
Well, post-conviction relief might be an avenue for him to address issues that might not have been addressed in his appeal.
Post-conviction
relief. They usually call it PCR. Mm-hmm. PCR is available almost any time to someone who's been convicted of a crime, even after their appeal. And usually the grounds for a post-conviction relief would be ineffective assistance of counsel. In other words,
yes.
His attorneys didn't do something right, in some phase of his trial or in his appeal.
Mm-hmm.
Now, inside the institution where he is, there are social workers, and there might even be a lawyer inside the institution where he is, who can give him the form to fill out to request a post-conviction relief.
Okay.
I have been involved in several post-conviction relief hearings. I've been involved because they said I was the prosecutor and I did something wrong in the prosecution.
Mm-hmm.
I was the attorney. I did something wrong as the attorney. And I've been appointed to represent people who were in prison who had requested a post-conviction relief. And I was appointed to represent those people. So there is some assistance for him if he wants to file a post-conviction relief. And you have to tell him to ask for the form to file for post-conviction relief.
Thank you so
or
much.
PCR. But
thank
until
you so much.
There's an his conviction is overturned, habeas corpus is not going to mean anything. They're not going to let him come out of prison until that happens. And good luck to you.
Thank you so much for your time.
You're quite welcome.
Bye-bye.
Well, I think we have time for one more. Cliff from Atlanta with a question. Well, questions about Stacey Abrams. Hey, Cliff, how are you?
Hey, how you doing? Good evening, ladies. How are you all?
Doing fine.
Hey, I just wanted to make a quick comment, and then I'd like to get your opinion on I want to talk about Stacey Abrams' campaign. I was being run at a Democratic Party of Georgia, and I just wanted to find out, get your take on it. Personally, I think she's running a very anemic campaign right now. I think they're playing defense and not offense, and they need to get out there and excite people about her candidacy and get people excited about voting, you know, the way Barack Obama did back in 2012. And I just think that right now nobody knows what she's standing for, and she is not articulating any points or any, she's not saying what she's going to do or what her plans are or anything like that. And I think it's a mistake. And I think if she doesn't come out real soon, she's going to lose that race. What do you think?
Well, I've heard her articulate a lot of things. Most recently, I heard her articulate support for Amazon bringing their second headquarters to Atlanta, and talking about the all of the tax cuts and different things that the legislature is doing to try to lure Amazon in to bring in those, I think it's something crazy, like 10,000 new jobs, but a whole lot of new jobs to Georgia. That is an issue that's very important. I've heard her speak on numerous issues just coming here on Saturdays. I'm not sure why you're not hearing it. Listening for it? Are you reading your newspaper and checking the internet for
her? I don't see her. I don't see any commercials being run on her behalf. I don't see her coming out to tell black voters what issues she thinks that we have. Other than, I think she said something about criminal justice reform. That seems to be the topic of the day. But I don't see anything coming out of her camp that really gets people excited about her candidacy. And if she doesn't excite her base, if she doesn't excite black people in the state of Georgia, she can't win.
She did something in that primary because the turnout was historic.
Mm-hmm.
She excited somebody. And I'm not sure it's time for commercials. You know, commercials cost money, and usually they're aired toward the end of the race or the last phase of the race.
Yeah, but her opponent has a couple of commercials out Stacey Abrams' campaign. Republicans are running a couple of commercials against her. But I haven't seen anything either talking about Brian Kemp or telling people what she has done or what plan she has on. And I just wanted to find out.
I think the issues that I've heard her talk about are she's in favor of expanding Medicaid, which would give health insurance to more people. She says she would be the education president to improve the opportunities for post-secondary education as well as.
Yeah, I did hear that.
For college. Mm-hmm. And I think she's been pretty vocal about that, but you're right. Commercials cost money, and I think she has a good chance of winning. Now, to say that she should excite people like Barack Obama did, I mean, I know you know that that was historic. Of course, having a woman elected, the first black female elected governor of Georgia, would be historic, too. I hope that you will soon start to hear, because I think she does have a message that will resonate with people who are interested in more jobs and more economic opportunity in Georgia. And she has a shot at it. As a matter of fact, 46% of the voters in Georgia right now are not white. And so if she can get something like 20 or 25% of white folk to vote with her, then she stands a very good chance of winning.
Part of the strategy may
be not wanting to incite the opposition. If you remember in Georgia 5 up in Cobb County, there were a lot of commercials. And the effect of those commercials was to excite Democratic voters, but it also excited the opposition. Mm-hmm. So she may be holding her fire until later in the race.
And I'm looking at, I would refer you to StaceyAbrams.com. It is more comprehensive than any website that I have seen for a candidate. It breaks down the issues regarding education, fair and diverse economy, effective engaged government, criminal justice reform, child care, K through 12, public education, jobs, higher education, LGBTQ plus rights, advanced energy jobs, economic development. I can't read all of them, but she has a essay and a list of her positions statements on each one of those items. If you'd like to learn more about it, go to StacyAbrams.com.
Yeah, but
it's very comprehensive. I don't want
to get on your nerves, but the idea, and I know it's true, but the idea that we need to be excited about voting, I mean, we don't get excited about going to work. We go to work because we're going to get a paycheck at the end of 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. I don't know, and maybe historically we do need to be excited, but it's time for us to start voting because we need to and we want to, not because we want to be entertained.
Yeah, but it's not about entertainment. It's about information.
Well, you're talking about being excited. I think when
John Ossoff was running, I remember when John Ossoff was running for Congress, we never had heard of John Ossoff before or since. But they came out, I mean, they had, John Lewis, who they roll out all the time on these Democratic candidates. They had him speaking in favor of John Ossoff. All these different people speaking in favor of John Ossoff, the Democratic Party of Georgia, seem to back him. I don't feel that with Stacey Abrams.
Yeah, well, go to StaceyAbrams.com and call us back next Saturday. We want to talk about it. But read a little bit about what she has on her website and what her positions are on various issues. I just named some of them. She has a whole lot more than I could name. But thank you for your call. We appreciate you. You're listening to Sisters in Law News and Talk 1380 WAOK.
You know, Sisters in Law, you all are the most mature women in black radio. It's just the maturity. It is so comforting and consoling.
They are real sisters and real lawyers. Janice and DeVita Mathis are the sisters in law on News and Talk 1380 WAOK. News and Talk 1380 WAOK.
Got a legal question? The sisters in law are here to help.
I can tell you've been crying and you're needing somebody to talk to. Girl.
They're so raw and real, and they ask all the questions I want the answers to.
Call now. Call now. Call now. 404 892 2703. The sisters in law on News and Talk 1380 WAOK.
Welcome back to Sisters in Law News and Talk 1380 WAOK. Our friend Todd is on the line, and I'm going straight to him. Hey, Todd, how are you?
Yo, DeVita, Janice, I'm in a perpetual state of struggle. That's how I am.
You don't sound like it. You sound like you're doing well.
Got to struggle to move forward. It's not a negative statement. I'm just constantly struggling to move forward.
So, what's going on with the $100 billion? I don't know. I don't think you mean reduction tax gain.
On CNBC, and there was a blurb about it in the Barron's magazine, Barron's news journal, things that I pay attention to. There is a proposal by the president and his cabinet to do a study. You have to study these things first, at least you're supposed to do a $100 billion, to see what the effects would be, the benefits of a $100 billion capital gains tax reduction over 10 years in this country, taking in consideration, which you have to do if you're going to study it correctly, inflation. And the reason why I wanted to talk about it, and I thought it might be of interest to you and some people that listen to it, is that many people will look at that and say that shallow thinking people would say that this is only going to benefit the rich. Well, no. It won't, if it is accomplished correctly. Because if you take in consideration, and I'm using Washington, D.C. as a model of the expensive places that I know, because I know D.C. real well, where if you're making $300,000 a year gross, you're near the top of what would be considered the middle class in the District of Columbia. And that is not rich. That's before taxes. And if you could benefit from a capital gains tax, which means that you'd be taxed on real estate that you own or sold, rather, stocks and bonds, and then taking consideration inheritances as well, or benefits of things that are gained through the acquisition of a trust to your benefit, this is a very good thing. And I'm saying $300,000 or less. So I think in Washington, D.C., the bottom end of what will qualify as the middle class is somewhere around 60 a year, probably closer to 50 a year. And I think we should talk about it, because we should be involved in it and talking with the various people who would be making decisions on it. What do you think?
Jan, I think that's a question for you.
I don't know enough about it to have a good opinion, Todd. You certainly can use tax policy to spur economic development. One of the simplest examples is mortgage interest. There's a big fight over the tax cut about whether or not home mortgage interest would remain tax deductible. That's an example of using tax policy to spur economic growth. Of course, right now we're involved in what looks like it may be a trade war. We're putting tariffs on imported goods, and it's having the opposite effect of dampening economic activity, because we're taxing it rather than trying to encourage trade. It used properly, you could use a capital gains tax, but to the extent that most Americans don't actively trade capital assets, a capital gains tax won't be the most beneficial way to spur economic activity. I'm not saying it couldn't have some positive effect, but most Americans do own stock. Most Americans own stock in their 401k plans and other retirement plans, but they're not active traders.
Right.
So they don't produce a lot of capital gains or capital losses, for that matter.
But there is,
I'm skeptical, but willing to listen.
There is a
segment. The devil is always in the details.
The truth is in the details. I try to stay away from the devil is in the details, because the devil implies evil. Truth implies accurate assessment of the facts. So
yeah, but Todd, what I can't reconcile is, you know, capital gains tax is the difference between the original cost of the asset and the current cost of the asset is what has been taxed.
The appreciation.
But in the Trump plan or idea, it's actually Mnuchin's idea, they would be able to deduct the value of inflation, which means that rich people will pay less tax. People who have those capital assets will pay less tax. Well, it's not my goal for them to pay less tax, because history has shown us over and over and over and over again that it does not trickle down. They do not invest the money in helping people get jobs or building new businesses that create jobs. It's just more money for the rich. I'm just not sure why you or anybody else who's not extremely rich would be for that.
Well, here's the reason why. And I don't believe in what they used to call trickle-down economics either. It was a very evil.
They still call it that, Todd.
Yeah, that's a rather evil concept. But here's the thing. This is why I use $300,000 in Washington, D.C. as a mark. There are more people that are in the middle class making somewhere between $300,000 and $50,000 than there are rich people in this country. And although they won't benefit as greatly as the rich, because they are in the middle class, they still would benefit greatly.
Yeah, but how much tax cut do the rich deserve? Because they will benefit most from that. So how much more do they deserve? My answer is no more.
If they said,
and I agree with you, DeVita. The other thing you have to consider, Todd, is when you cut taxes, you also cut government spending.
That's true.
PG County here in, you say you're familiar with D.C.
Very much.
Well, then you're familiar with Prince George's County.
Yep.
It is the home of the highest income earning blacks in the world. But you know where most of them work? Many
federal
of them
government.
Work for government. And so if on the one hand you're going to give them a tax break, but if the other end you're going to constrain government spending on employees, which is always the most important and most expensive outlay of any enterprise, what is the net gain to those high-earning government employees
if you give them a tax cut, but you also cut back on government spending on employment.
Which is where they
work.
So it
seems to me sort of a, what we would call an illusory promise in the law.
Well, it's definitely a dilemma, because if you cut back on government spending, like you're saying, you may also cut back on employees, which means some of those people might get fired or get laid off. But that's the that would be the benefit.
And that's what's been going on right now, because as you probably know, if you're familiar with D.C., and I'm sure you are because you say you are, there's been a moratorium on new government positions ever since the president has been in office.
Yep.
And the people who are hurt the most by that are these highly experienced, highly skilled African-Americans here in D.C. who have put together a remarkable economy, but it is under threat from Trump policy.
Well, if there's a way to get this done, I'm sure, and benefit more the middle class, but that's what will be the purpose of the study. And the only way to get it done correctly.
They don't care about the middle class.
Huh?
They don't care about the middle class.
Actually, they do.
Yeah, well, you got to prove that one too.
Middle class, because the middle class is propping up more than anybody.
I'm talking about the Trump administration.
They do too.
They proved it in the tax cuts that they pushed through. But we appreciate you always bring us something odd and strangely uninformative. But we appreciate you anyway.
All right, that's cool. I'll take that.
Pick a different subject. That one is not working for me.
Some of your listeners will appreciate it a little bit better.
No, they won't. That'll make no sense for us.
Okay.
Thank you anyway, though, Todd.
All right.
You're listening to Sisters-in-Law News and Talk 1380 WAOK.
I am Reverend Tracy Blackman, Executive Minister of Justice and Local Church Ministries for the United Church of Christ. You are listening to Sisters-in-Law with Janice and Davida Mathis on News and Talk 1380 WAOK, the voice of the community.